Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Along with my co-host here, Mr. Jabron Clement, we will be visited tonight by Mr. John Scully. He's just coming in from that big fight up in Verona last night. But in the meantime, we have quite a few things to talk about. Jabron, how are we doing tonight, my man?
I'm doing a little better, man. Me, my whole family, wife, kids, man, we got hit with a virus this week. I lost my voice, everything. We're just under the weather, but right now I'm about 80% and excited to talk about this action over the weekend.
Yeah, man, well, it seems like that little bug's been going around because I got hit with something this weekend myself. Don't know exactly what it was, but anyway, you know, we're here and let's see what's going on, man. We're going to be joined by Mr. Scully about 9:30-ish. Unfortunately, the layman is tied up tonight, so he won't be here. Man, you know, we had some boring fights, but we also had some very exciting fights this weekend. Let's see. You want to start with the Carissa Shields fight, that card, and then we'll wait for Scully because Scully was actually in Verona last night watch that devastating knockout by one David Lemieux. So we're going to wait till 9:30 to kind of talk about that. In the meantime, I know you said you were under the weather, but have you had your ear to the ground? Anything you heard, or did the virus knocked you completely out this week? Because you had your ear to the ground up there in Brooklyn.
Heard anything about what in particular?
Any of the fights that are coming up there, any changes, any insurance policies, big fights, that coming down the pike that we haven't heard of. I see we're getting into the period now where we just have some of it's marked PBC champions, but it's not, there's nothing been really put down as far as a destination or a card. We had some cards like the Thursday night card. Also, last night we had the fight night at the D over in Vegas. It wasn't televised, but, fight night at the D, we have a lot of those guys on. And I'm wondering, with this fight up in Verona, what else is coming? What else? Well, you have some cards coming up at the Barclays Center, right?
Oh, yeah. In a couple of weeks, we have the Sean Porter and the Berto fight. And what I can say is that I even though I was sick and barely couldn't talk hardly, I kept my ear to the street. And I can say the first quarter of this year has really been tremendous for boxing. And when I say that, because this is like a stepping stone for some of the bigger fights that's on the way. I've heard some things I can't report it yet because it's not in cement. So, you know, I don't want to be spreading inaccurate information. But, JK, what you've been asking for is looking like you might get you a big fight out there in Cali. Just remember, I'm telling you this. You might be getting a big fight in the next 3 to 6 months. So just keep your eye out. And when I get more information about this as being official, then our fans and listeners will be the first to know. But there's a lot of great fights on the horizon. We got different possibilities of the Thurman, Garcia, Fiasco. We still don't know what's going on with Pacquiao, Khan situation. So, I mean, if you're a boxing fan, this is what you've been waiting for, to be on the edge of your seat, to be anticipating fights, and to know that there's a lot of up-and-coming fighters on the way. The Jarrett Hurds and the Gervonta Davises and different kinds of that sort. But I think I will speak on, since we're going to wait to touch on some of the more impactful fights over the weekend. Did you get to see one of our best friends of the show, Boo Boo, over the weekend?
No, I did not. I did manage, let him know that, we were in his corner and hoping that he pulled out a victory. I wasn't able, like I said, I was down this weekend. I haven't really been able to do all my due diligence this morning. So, no, I did not get to watch that fight, but I was certainly I'm trying to get my box rack up now, but what was the results, and was it a devastating knockout like he predicted?
Well, unfortunately, JK, it went full 12 rounds. It was a split decision. Boo Boo did not look his best. I will give him a pass just because the simple fact he hasn't been active in the last 2 years. You know, it's been a very large gaps in between his fights. So I will be nice and give him a pass.
Okay.
But he fought a veteran. You know, he's not, you know, of course he's not popular here, but over in this country he's a veteran that only had one loss. He was a game fighter. He came to fight. I will give him, you know, I will give him that props. And you know, he had a live dog in there. I just felt like this supposed to have been a coming out party, a display to put the rest of the division on notice, and so he could get some big fights. And I don't know if that fight is going to help his situation on getting a big fight.
But more importantly, he does have a belt, right?
He has a piece of the WBA. You know, the WBA has a million belts. He has a piece of the title, but the main title holder of that sanction is Laura.
Okay. Well,
Laura is the champion, and he's Boo Boo is like the interim champion, you know. So he's not the legit champion.
One of those regulars or something like that. So I mean, either way, then he might turn up being a mandatory down the line.
It's possible, but right now, I would like to see where they go from here. You know, it's just sad that he's in a situation as far as promotional wise. You know, he went in and signed with two smaller promoters, and what is it? Star? Is it Star? And is another promotion company he's a part of. And I just really think that it's really sad that his career has to take that path, because he is a talent. And if he had been more active going forward, I think his stock would definitely be much higher than what it is today.
Yeah, Boo-Boo is a very strange case. Like you said, it seemed at one time he was going to be a star. And, then he kind of got in some promotional, I don't know what you want to call it. We all know about the game of boxing. So, he got caught up in one of those promotional things. And like you said, he ended up with a small company that he really thought that he was going to be the face of, and things just haven't worked out. So, I mean, things happen, and hopefully he can keep his head up, and like you said, after being off 2 years, he isn't really in a position to fight a Laura or some of those top echelon guys yet. But speaking of that, have you heard much about the Canelo Chavez Jr. fight? I noticed yesterday when Roy Jones Jr. and Max Letterman were talking, they were talking about who was it? I believe it was it might have been in the first fight where they were saying that I believe what's the little guy's name? He won the fight, but his name eludes me right now. He lost to
Gamboa.
Profit. Yeah, Gamboa. They were saying that Gamboa came in, that he was really a welterweight when he came in. They were speaking of, just like you mentioned, I believe it might have been last week, Chavez Jr. is going to be coming in probably with the weight advantage. And he'll probably, they're wondering how Canelo is going to, take those legitimate shots from, a legitimate guy instead of, all these little guys that he's been fighting lately. What was your thoughts on that? Because you were kind of going right along in the same vein as Max, when talking about Canelo having to face a fighter that's really his size or possibly bigger.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at Canelo overall, his career, and looking at his fighting style, how he doesn't fight a full round, he takes rounds off. I say, he paces himself. He comes out and throws combinations between the first and the fifth round. And after the fifth round, he likes to start pacing himself, where he will throw an explosive, flashy combination and then go to being flat-footed and then backpedal his way towards the ropes and utilize his bobbing and weaving to try to avoid punches and to buy himself time to get a little more gas. And then when it get closer to the end of the round, he like to come out with another flashy, explosive combination to get the judge's attention. So he won't be able to do that against a guy his size that gives him a large amount of pressure, has a high punch output and the weight. If you notice, Canelo in his fights barely getting any clinches. Barely getting any clinches. And a guy like Chavez Jr., he will eventually get you in clinching. I've seen Canelo get very frustrated in the ring when he doesn't have answers, a.k.a. Mayweather fight, a.k.a. in the Laura fight, until he scored the slick knockdown that to this day nobody will show that knockdown in slow motion to see Canelo stepped on Austin Trout's foot before he punched him. I'm telling you, go back and watch it. I watched it 1,000 times.
I think I was actually there for that fight because we, you know, Austin Trout was a big fan of the show, still is, nobody wanted to notice that. And Golden Boy, they made sure, like you said, nobody has ever, you know, went back and watched that tape, you know. If it had been the other way around, believe me, you would have been watching it every day.
Definitely. You know? And that's the reason why before he went down, he did like a stutter step because he was trying to catch his balance. But his leg, he could, you know, when he tried to pull back in defense, Canelo's foot was there. So that's why it seemed like his leg buckled. But everybody was paying attention at the upper part of the body and not looking at the whole screen. But anyway, I'm not going to be the old dead horse, but I really think Chavez Jr. can put that pressure on him and lean that weight. When you got a the champ ain't here this week. You got a bigger guy leaning on you for 12 rounds. I mean, I don't know, JK. We see how winded he is by throwing explosive combinations. So imagine doing that, plus having a big guy like Chavez leaning on you, tying you up, frustrating you. And let's not forget, Chavez Jr. does have power. He might not have the greatest boxing skill, but he has power. And not only does he have power, he has power late in fights, as Sergio Martinez.
Yeah. I mean, you know, all you're saying is true, but you know, to me, you know, I'm hoping, you know, and from all accounts, he is actually training for this fight, and you know, it's not one of those let's train in the kitchen and I'm going to, you know, I mean, I think this is a fight, the rivalry warrants. You know, this fight. I'm hoping that this is a good fight. I want Chavez to be in the best shape possible. I also want Canelo to be in the best shape possible too, because you know, like you said, for the first time in half a decade. 5 years that he's fighting somebody his size, maybe longer. This is a fight where, you know, I think Chavez Jr. could make his mark on the comeback, by taking on Golden Boy's best. I'm also surprised, Canelo has asked for a lot of fights, and Golden Boy, you know, has given them to him. But this is another one of those fights, like the Mayweather fight. Golden Boy can't, wasn't really happy with him fighting Floyd Mayweather that early in his career, and this might be another fight that Canelo calls for that, I think Canelo has more to lose in this fight than Chavez. I mean, you know, Canelo is basically Golden Boy's golden goose, and even though they're signing fighters and you know, they've had some good fights. Canelo, loss for Canelo would be a major setback for Golden Boy. And I'm not really sure, you know, that they would be able to, well, I mean, you know, let's see what happens in the fight, and then we'll talk about it. But another thing, you know, as always, you know, I love to talk about oh man, you know what? I'm very remiss, man, I've been thinking about this all week since it happened. And I forgot at the beginning of the show for us to show the proper respect, yes, sir, for one Mr. Lou Duva. And before we start talking about Lou and some of his fighters, let's give him the proper respect and give him 10 seconds of silence, please. Okay, Jabron, you know, boxing has lost another great, I'm going to call him a legend, because, you know, I remember Lou kind of way back in the day, you know, when he was in his heyday, and he brought some great, great fighters to the ring. And then when he became a promoter, Lou, you know, was almost as fiery a promoter as he was a trainer. I guess, you know, you as a millennial didn't get to see Lou as a trainer, but you did get a chance to, you know, experience some of his passion and a lot of the fights that he promoted. So what are your memories of one Mr. Lou Duva? Did we lose? I guess we must have lost my co-host. I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute. when you said let's do 10 seconds of silence, I muted myself. I'm sorry. But I remember growing up as a kid, I always saw him in a lot of boxing footage. Like anytime you see video of like older boxers, Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, like you always seen his face. And then me growing up as a, you know, in Virginia and seeing one of my favorite fighters to this day, Sweet Pea, and I would see him and be like, you know, that guy always got a smile on his face. I couldn't understand it. Like, he always, to me, I don't know for anybody else, he always had a smile on his face. And I was like, wow, this is a brutal sport. And this guy always smiling. And, you know, far as his history and his credentials and different things of that sort, I'm not as educated on that, his accomplishments and things of that sort, but I do know him and his family is very well respected throughout the boxing community. And, you know, My prayers and wishes go out to his family.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, like you said, you know, the whole family is involved in boxing, and you know, I mean, Lou was a cut man. He was a promoter. He was a Lewis had so many hats. I mean, you know, like a lot of people called him a master motivator, but like you said, you know, once when I think his success, the first fight that really brought him to the forefront, I believe, was the success of promoting the Leonard Hearns fight. You know, I think was the fight that he was most known for promoting. But, you know, like I said, Lou, you know, once if you kind of study his history, I think Lou came out of the Army and immediately went into boxing. And that was, I mean, that was even before I was born, I believe. You know, like you said, he was always smiling and you know, even when his fighters would get knocked out, you know, Lou would, you know, just, you know, hey, man, you know, you did a good job. Get up, you know, we'll do it again next time. You know, I mean, he was just that type of guy. But now, you know, if you were on the other side of Lou, you know, it could be, kind of like, you know, not kissing the Godfather's ring. You know, like you said, our thoughts and prayers all go out to the Duva family. And, you know, we just hope that the legacy of Lou and the family lives on. That I got that out the way very late. Sorry about that. Some other things that's on the agenda here. Let's see. I hate trying to look at the Ring magazine because it's so damn hard to follow. You know, before it was the Bible of boxing, now it's the Bible of all sports, all combat sports. Let's get Mr. Scully in here, and we're going to talk about that devastating knockout that took place in Verona.
And while you're getting Scully on, might I add, if you remember last year that I went to the Golden Gloves here in New York, so one of the champions from that tournament, Floyd Mayweather, just signed to TMT the other day. And if you can remember when I was just giving a little insight on the Golden Glove, remember I brought up a guy. I said, yo, it's a guy that remind me a lot of Floyd Mayweather. And I'm not calling him Floyd, but he remind me a lot. If you can remember me talking Golden Glove tournament, and look what happened almost a year later. He signed to TMT Promotion.
Hey, you know, Floyd seems to be a stable, he seems to be very legitimate about pursuing this promotion thing. You know, there's a lot of guys that have tried. You know, we've had Mike Tyson now. Evander is talking about the. Hold on, I believe we have. Mr. Scully in the queue. What's going on,
Scully? Hello? Yes, sir. How you doing?
Doing good, man. I know you've been gone for a week. You know, you said you were heading up to Montreal and then down to New York. So, how was your trip, man?
it was a great trip, but in the last 2 days. Of training, we found
Bad
out that
news.
Sullivan Barrera pulled out of the fight with Archer, so training camp was canceled as of that day.
Okay. What's the game plan? I mean, you know, you just have to, are you waiting for a replacement or, you know?
Well, they're having trouble getting people to fight Arthur. I mean, everybody's refusing to fight. So what they're trying to do is they're going to petition the IBF to try and just make him the mandatory challenger, because nobody wants to. It's like it might be the first time in history that no one is going, no one is accepting the challenge to fight for the mandatory spot. Everybody in the top five, I guess, said no.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Okay. So they're hoping that he'll become mandatory automatically.
Wow. That's that's some news there. You know, that's one of the things that you know, we haven't heard out of the mainstream. So, you know, it's good. You know, well, and you know, go ahead.
Are you indicating that Sullivan Burrell was afraid to take the fight, or are you just saying he didn't sign the contract?
Well, he didn't sign it for a reason, and nobody seems to know what the reason is. You know, we were training. Like, we were training. The date was set. We were planning on
well,
going, and then all of a sudden, you know. So I don't know. Like, I haven't heard anything from officially from the other side. I really don't know.
So Sullivan Barrera was on TV fighting one of the pound-for-pound fighters in boxing, Andre Ward, put up a good fight, but he lost, first loss of his career. Then he comes back and gives a great performance in knocking a boxer out. And, you know, he's highly, pretty much highly ranked. And it came down to dollar and cents, pretty much. They went for the fight with the purse bid, and pretty much their promotional team knew that Barrera wouldn't want to settle for the 25%. So that was the more reason of them for pushing for to win the purse bid. So when he looked at the numbers, he like, come on, man. He was only $1,000 for that fight.
I think it was 60,000 dollars
for the fight. So I don't think it was fear. It's just called, you know, making a great business decision, because I know Barrera can go out there and get another fight, probably of somebody might not be named or ranked as high as better be, but he'll probably make a lot more money.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
like
I said, they were, his promoters
were
under the pressure.
Scully, you're breaking up.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you
can
now.
You hear me? Yeah. Okay. You know, as I understood it, like they were, you know, his own promoters were under the impression that, all right, that the fight was on. They were, you know, they were going to sign it, but he just wouldn't sign it. You know, I mean, I'm not saying anybody's scared, but obviously, it's an indication. Like in other words, if they offered him $64,000 to fight Mickey Mouse, he would have taken it no problem. But obviously, Arthur's a handful for $64,000. You know, so I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, whatever it is, it is. I mean, they got to get somebody else. But they're actually, like I said, they're trying to petition, because if they can't get anybody else, what are they going to do? Arthur can't wait around forever, so they've got to make him mandatory. So, you know, that's for them to sort it out. I don't have any say in the business end of things at all. So, you know, I learn as you guys learn what happens.
Yeah, so you, like you said, you know, it might have been a business decision, but you know, we have seen, you know, there've been some championship fights, you know, and I go back to Lamont Peterson, who had a couple championship fights that were actually ended up being less than that. So it's, you know, actually, you know, when you talk about, you know, and I agree with you, Javon, you know. It might have just been a business decision, you know, high risk, low reward type of deal, you know. But you know, it to me, you know, it back in the day, I mean, you know, the purse was one thing, but you know, it was a matter of pride, the best fighting the best, And you know, I mean, when you're not in that particular top tier, you know, you're just not going to make you know, those type of dollars, regardless of your credentials. I would love to see the difference between what he was going to make and what you know, Chocolatito is going to make fighting on this undercard. Anyway, you know. Anyway, I mean, you know, hey, it's just the politics. You know, as you said, Scully, you're a trainer. You don't get involved often in that. So, you know.
Right.
But speaking of, you know, you being gone, now you did get to Verona last night. And,
yeah.
You know, what is it? You know, before we talk about the main fight, let's talk about the undercard. I did all I could not to fall asleep. I had a couple buckets of popcorn, but unfortunately it wasn't even worth going through that. But Mr. Gamboa, 35 years old, what were your impressions even though he won that fight, Scully?
You know, it's like, you know, some guys just have that style. Some guys are just very relaxed in the ring. But, you know, I just come from a mentality of you would think, you know, a showcase fight like that. You're on HBO. You know, you've got to put some oomph into it. You know what I mean? You got to show that you want to be back. You have to show that you want to be back on HBO. You can't just go through the motions and expect that people are going to want to see you again. And you know, I appreciate skills. I appreciate when a guy doesn't get hit. You know, I personally can appreciate that, but I know that where I was sitting at the media tables, you know, everybody in where I was at, they were just like, let's say, really frustrated. They really did not enjoy the fight. You know, so it's one thing to have skills, but it's another thing to, you know, be the type of guy that the fans want to see, and you know, HBO is you know, reserved for the elite, and it's not just skill wise, but entertainment wise, and he's just not doing it. You know, skills aren't enough in that case.
What did you think about Gamboa's fight to Brown?
It was lackluster, but one thing, are we taking some credit away from maybe his opponent? Maybe he was a game fighter. He came to lay everything out on the line, and sometimes you run into those veterans, man, that you can't get out of there, you know? The likes of, like, a Glenn Johnson or Baldemir or what's the guy, Sekia Beaker. Like, they just tough guys. They're going to make everybody look horrible. Like Sergio Moore, before he got knocked out to Jacobs, he made everybody look horrible. Shane, Vernon Forrest. So sometimes it's just some guys that just make bad fights, you know? But with that being said, they have him lined up for some more fights. I think they're going to throw him in there with some opponents that's going to make him look good so they can try to set up the possibility of the Lomachenko fight, which I was hearing whispers last night. After the fight last night, I saw some interviews with the father and different things of that sort. So we shall see.
I don't know. I mean, you know, after watching, you know, what Crawford did to him, I'm not sure if I really want to see him in there with the Lomachenko. You know, Lomachenko, when I watch him, he leaves me speechless. I mean, you know, he's inside, he's outside. The footwork, the hand speed, the combinations, you know, at 130, wow. I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure that I would want to see Gamboa in that situation. I think that, you know, that would, I know he's looking for that one big fight, you know, you know, when you talk about his age, you know, I mean, how many more big fights is he going to have? And you know, unlike you, Jabron, you know, I'm going to kind of lean towards Scully here. You know, HBO is also an entertainment network. And, you know, unless they put him in there with somebody that's tailor-made for him, I don't see how he could, you know, get back up to the top, you know, especially trying to climb that ladder toward Lomachenko. There's a lot of guys in that weight division. But, you know, do you see that possibly down the line, Scully, Lomachenko and Gamboa?
I mean, you know, based off of last night, I don't think so. You know, he'd have to fight somebody else. And like you say, you know, get him an opponent that'll make him showcase his strengths. You know, which I kind of thought last night would have done, but he just didn't seem like he wanted to really push it. You know what I mean? He didn't want, you know, it was almost like he was sparring a bit. But you know, I mean, no matter what, he still has a name. And, you know, so you could sell it just on his name. You know, I've seen Stranger Things, so I wouldn't be shocked if they fought. But, you know, I think he'd, at this point, especially, I think he'd have a lot of trouble with Lomachenko.
Yeah. You know, now, you know, let's talk about the elephant in the room, because I will admit I did not see this coming. I thought, you know, that the fight would go into I would say at least the seventh, eighth round. hey, you talk about this has to be definitely a candidate for knockout of the year, if not knockout of the year. Now, Scully, you were sitting ringside, so you know, we're gonna come to you last year because you had the actual point of view. Jabron, what did you think about the fight, Lemieux last night?
Well, I was so disappointed in Stevens. I know you can't, you know, show an old dog new tricks, but that I just felt like, you know, the first fight after he got with John David Jackson, I saw a little bounce in his step. So I had high hopes for him. I was like, okay, maybe, you know, they get a couple of fights under their belt together that, you know, so we could see some changes. Last night I saw no head movement. I saw flat-footedness. I saw lack thereof of utilizing the jab, utilizing the ring, period, no ring generalship. Like, you got this guy coming out throwing double and triple jabs. Why are you walking directly into that? Why are you not using lateral movement? Know why? Because he has a street fighter's mentality. He depends on his power. If you was watching, you saw that he was just waiting and trying to time Lemieux to catch him with his hook. And that's not going to work when you're in here with professional prize fighters, people that have skills. Not saying Lemieux is the greatest boxer, but he have enough boxing IQ to know, hey, this guy's shorter than me, and he's flat-footed. I'm just going to walk this guy down. You know, I was just so disappointed. But I watched the fight on with the volume off, and this morning I went back and watched it with the volume on. They were some thudding shots. I will say, you know, the couple times Curtis did counter,
between the two of them, they let go some thudding shots. I mean, Scully, how was it sounding there in the arena?
Yeah, no, it was like firecrackers, and I was surprised. You know, they both came out strong. You know, and Curtis is willing. You know, Curtis will let it go, and he was just missing with that counter hook. You know, Curtis has a really, really nice counter hook. He was launching it, and he just couldn't find it. And David, one thing, I don't know if it showed up on TV, but one thing I was really struck by was how much bigger David was. Like, David looked like a full weight class heavier, bigger. That the size difference was very, very noticeable, which is unusual because a lot of people don't know, but when Curtis was a junior Olympian, 15 years old, he actually fought at 201. And as an amateur, he was a light heavyweight. He actually won the U.S. championships. He beat Horace Cloud at 178 pounds.
Yep,
so to see him at 160 and be so small, like, David looked humongous next to him, which was unusual. But, you know, the thing for me being there live was he was down. He didn't move for a long time. Like, he was right in front of me. Like, he didn't move for a long time. It was scary. And his mother, Curtis's mother, was in the front row. She was outside the metal barrier, and she actually climbed over the barrier to come over. And she went, and I don't know what she did, but she went to him, near him. And I'll never forget it. She was right in front of me. She turned around and just walked away almost like aimless, like she was like in a daze by herself, like nobody was with her. And she just had this look on her face, like just confusion, almost like disbelief. You know, I don't even know where she was going. She just was walking aimlessly away from the ring. She left. And that was kind of powerful to see up close. And but one good thing, you know, I don't know if they showed it on TV, but at one point, Curtis, and he could have been doing it just out of instinct, but it was a positive thing. He actually took his own gloves off. He was just, that was his reaction. Once he woke up, he took both of his gloves off. So that left me a little bit more optimistic. And then when we were at the post-fight press conference, I guess Kathy Duva called in and said that Curtis was going to be all right, that he was responsive and everything. But being there live, I've been in boxing 37 years, whatever it is. There's only a handful of times in my life I've been at a fight and I've been scared for a fighter. Like, literally, I could count on one hand. And this was definitely one of them last night.
And what I loved about the post-fight press conference was that David Lemieux never backpedaled on his statement. Once he found out that Curtis was okay, he said, you know, he wishes his family the best. You know, he's happy that he's okay, but he got what he deserved because he was running his mouth. You know, I like that he didn't go back and be like, oh, no. No, he stood by that. Like, yeah, and this is what happened to people going forward. Like, that's what we need in boxing. Not saying you got to be the bad guy, but nowadays everybody want to be politically correct, and if something happened, they got to backpedal on their statement. No, he stood firm after the fight. What you think about that, Scully?
Yeah. I was at I actually went live from the press conference, and I filmed that part so people could watch it actually on my Facebook page now. I posted it. And, he was like, he said, hey, you know, you want to run your mouth? He said, you still got to answer in the ring. You still got to back it up. So sometimes it doesn't go your way and you end up looking foolish. You're right. He definitely stuck with that. And, you know, he was very matter of fact about it. You know what I mean? It was almost like, you know, cold-blooded in a way. He's just like, hey, you ask for it, sometimes you get it. And which was fine with me. You know, that's the reality of fighting.
But now, Scully, I got to, you know, ask you about the, you know, like you said, he looked, I think on TV they said he weighed 177. But I'm sure that you know, like you said, we haven't usually seen David come in the ring. And he kind of looked a little bit out of shape, even though, you know, he he dominated the fight. He took his corner's advice, and like he said, instead of throwing all those shots that weren't really being that much effective, even though they were winning the rounds, to just be a little more economical and keep up, with his shots. But Scully, one of the, 37 years, man, isn't one of the main axioms of boxing is that you don't hook with a hooker?
Right. Well, that was the game plan. You know, I talked to, because obviously Mark Ramsey trains David, and he trains Better Bio, who I help with. So, and we talked about it, and that was the thing. Mark was saying how he noticed that as good as Curtis Hook is, that he always drops his right hand when he throws his left hook. So they planned on catching the hook, you know, letting it hit his glove and just fire at the same time. And, it literally worked out like perfectly. He couldn't ask for a better result. And that's the thing, a lot of guys, even Ray Robinson, as great as he was, Ray Robinson, when he threw the big left hooks, which he's known for, huge left hook, he always dropped his right hand, but just a lot of guys couldn't time him. They couldn't keep up with the speed, and they were too worried about defending against the hook to think about launching their own. But David was calm, and he felt he had control, and he caught the hook, and he let his own go, and, that's scientific right there. It was perfect, and, it's actually a good lesson for fighters. You have a good hook, but you still got to have a good defense as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Scully, like I said, I know you just came back home after being gone for a week, so we're going to let you go here a little early, man. Why don't you give us your final thoughts? Tell us, anything that you might have heard on the grapevine while you were out there, and hey, we look forward to seeing you next week.
Yes, sir. Nothing alarming. Just what's unusual is, Arthur's going to hopefully fight for the mandatory spot or get the mandatory spot. But also, Mark Ramsey's other light heavyweight, Lider Alvarez, he just scored a big knockout over Lucien Boutte the other day. So Mark actually has two light heavyweights who are close to being mandatory challengers. So he's in an unusual situation, but it's a good one to be in as a trainer. So, I'm happy to kind of be close to that situation. I was really excited to go to Miami and fight Barrera. I was really, really up for that, and I was getting very motivated for it, and Arthur obviously was in the gym. That's boxing. You gotta take the good with the bad, and you have to expect disappointments. So that's part of the learning process, and Arthur's learning that now. But I've got my amateur boxing reunion on Saturday in New York, a week from yesterday. And if everyone shows up who says they are, it's going to be a very, very special night. Riddick Bowe's coming in on Friday night, and we're gonna hang out in the city Friday, and and then get there in the morning. So I'm actually looking forward to talking to you guys next week and telling you all about it. Jabron, if you're coming, let me know, and you're more than welcome to hang out with us.
Yeah, I just needed to know what's the cover.
No, it's free.
Oh, wow.
I don't charge anything for my reunions. Nah, I don't have any. I do it all on my own. I have no backing. I have no nothing. Like, there's no. I don't charge anything. Just you come and
Oh, okay. Because I saw some people was asking in the chat, about that, and I was like, wow, yeah, that's a good question. And I try to help you out too, Scully. I saw the missed typo. I helped you out over there.
yeah, I appreciate it. Yes, sir. Yeah. Sometimes I don't even, I'm not even thinking. But I appreciate that. The place we're doing it is a restaurant, club, lounge type of place. They're gonna have some food, but they have appetizers, and so, you know, people can buy food from them, and, you know, that's kind of how I repay them, if people want to have drinks or whatever they want to do. But as far as the cover charge, come on in. You're all good.
Sounds great. Sounds great, man. I'll definitely be out there supporting.
All right. That sounds really good. And so that's pretty much it. I'll be back in the gym tomorrow, and I'll see you Saturday, and we'll be on the air next Sunday.
All right, Scully. Well, you have a good night, my man. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. All right. I'll see you soon. All right.
All right.
JK, okay, to
Bron,
get in a go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, now, you know, the price is definitely right. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, if you hit Scully up, he can tell you, you know, where you guys can meet up or whatever, man. And,
I already have the information. We've been communicating.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we've been communicating.
Oh,
I got all the info, location and everything. Yeah,
you know, I have to commemorate you once again, man, on the Pugilist Corners T-shirt, man. Those that was a very slick design there, you know, and I appreciate, you know, you wearing it, you know, when you can.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When I went, half of the time when I work out at the gym, I have it on. Yep. Either I got that on or my Gleason shirt, one of the two.
Yeah, we if you know, maybe you know, if there's any of the audience out there that is there somewhere where they can is there pictures of you in the shirt on your page at all?
Yeah, I have pictures of me on my shirt, but I was thinking about for the boxer reunion that I might create a new shirt. I might go get one made Thursday. and I'll hit you up on a private conversation and we'll chat about that, because I wanted to big you up and throw you up on that shirt, man.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. Like I said, great design there, man. You know, we always look forward to you know, these reunions and whatnot. I can't wait for our next fight out here. Of course, everybody kind of knows me by my hat, but I try to wear something that everybody recognizes as part of the Pugilist Corner. So, you know, we do slowly manage to get our props. You know, like I said, you know,
the event that I went to last Friday before the Danny Garcia fight, I spoke to a lot of people, and when I let them know, I said, yeah, I'm with the Pugilist Corner. And they're like, oh, yeah, I heard it. I see it on the internet. Or, like, when I spoke to, like, Willie Monroe and some of the other boxers, like, yeah, you now you could get the face to go with the voice, because, you know, we've interviewed them on our Tuesday show. So it's like, oh, great to meet you, you know. So that was a great experience last week. But to reiterate on what you brought up about David Lemieux, and you were saying that he was big and things like that, you know I keep my ear to the street, JK. So to give you a little insight on that, he wasn't trained for a 12-round fight. It was a reason why he was trying to get Curtis out of there, because he didn't have a full training camp. He didn't fully train for the fight.
Well, you know, that was the rumor, and you know, I mean, you know, a couple, you know, people had said that, and that was the reason why they were looking, you know, for, you know, that was the reason why basically I said 7 or 8 rounds, but I thought, you know, after 7 or 8 rounds, carrying all that weight, I thought it would be, you know, a disadvantage to Lemieux, but unfortunately for Mr. Stevens, we didn't get that far. But yet and still, you know, I still don't see, you know, even after that great performance last night, I don't see him being able to go in and do anything with Triple G.
No, because Jim, I have to give, you know, I don't agree on a lot of things with Jim Lampley, but I will give him his props on an interview he did last night post-fight. He was questioned about a possibility with Triple G and David Lemieux and the difference, you know, between the old David Lemieux and this David Lemieux, and he gave a great answer. He said that there was a reason why Triple G threw 52 jabs in the first round of the David Lemieux fight because he knew the type of power that David Lemieux possessed, and he didn't want to be engaging with that type of power and possibly get clipped. So when he said that last night, I went back and watched the fight today, and he wasn't lying. He threw more jabs than any middleweight, like in copy box records, through the first three rounds of that fight. So that lets you know that Triple G is not just a power puncher. He does have a boxing IQ.
And not only that, you got to remember who trains Triple G. I mean, you know, it's not
definitely. Definitely. Abel Sanchez.
I mean, you know, right now, you know, he's my Emmanuel Stewart of boxing. I couldn't think of a better trainer for Triple G at this stage of his game, and knowing, you know, what game plan to put forth in order for him to be successful. You've talked to Abel many times, and we talked a little bit about that the last time we had him on the show. If anybody's going to come in there with a game plan, and his fight is going to stick to it, it's going to be Abel and Triple G.
And I think this fight Saturday is going to be very tactical. I don't think it's going to be a slugfest. I think that Danny Jacobs Triple G fight, the more and more I think about it, is going to be tactical, because Abel does have enough respect for Jacobs' speed and power. He might not respect his chin, but he has respect for speed and power. So I don't think Triple G is going to go and walk Danny down like a lot of people I'm hearing in different chats and barbershop talk and all this. I'm just hearing, Triple G is just going to walk him down, smother him, get him in the corner, and the ref will stop the fight after you see Danny taking too many punches, or if he don't get knocked out. I'm like, wow.
Well, now, you know, talking about Danny, we've kind of sized up Triple G now. You know, Danny came out with a very unorthodox game plan against Peter Cullen. I don't think anybody saw that coming, including, Peter's trainers and whatnot, but do you think that Danny will try to come out fast and overwhelm Triple G, or are you looking for Danny to take Triple G into deeper waters? Because I can see Danny winning by an early stoppage, but I can't see Danny winning if the fight goes the full 12 rounds. Your thoughts?
Oh man, I'm back and forth with this, JK. I've been thinking about this so much. I'm not sure. Like, I think I agree with your analysis, because the thing is, you know, Triple G is powerful. He's strong, but he doesn't have one punch knockout power. And the thing is, if the fight went 12, it'll be an accumulation of punches, you know, on Danny. And Danny has a lot of heart. He has a lot of pride. And I think that if he went down, he would get up and keep getting up and keep getting up. So I think you're right in that aspect, JK. I think Danny has the ability to go out there and give another shocker early, catch Triple G cold, better than him winning the fight over 12 rounds.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's no knock on Danny. You know, I mean, to me, that's just, you know, first of all, you know, the name, you know, and we got to take that into account. I don't care, you know, people always talk about the judges, this and that and the other, but to me, judges are human also, and we can see from, you know, some of the scoring for the different bouts that, you know, judges, just like everybody else, you know, have tend to look for certain things in their fighters, and you know, if the fighter doesn't, you know, overcome those things necessarily, they're going to give them certain rounds. You know, I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. Let's be, you know, let's just that's why judges are there, because they have differences of opinion. Speaking of, you know, some more differences of opinion here, what did you think about the Clarissa Shields fight? What did you think about, you know, the card that she was paired with?
Well, there was nobody, but I tell you what, it was entertaining, especially the Pillow Man. The guy brought the pillow to the weigh-in and told the guy, "You going to sleep." And he wasn't lying, because the guy went to sleep. I mean, what more could you ask for on a Friday night? You might not be household names, but to be able to get some action, some, you know, something that had you kind of like on the edge of your seat, like, wow, these guys are really, you know, letting it fly. And then to see Clarissa try to, like, market herself, I took certain things away from the fight that I just love so much, because she understands the position that she in. She understands that, you know, she's African-American and she's a woman, so she has to make statements. And the statement she made at the end of the first round, you know, that aggressiveness when the ref went to break them up and she's like, yeah, like really still want to get it on. And like, you know, that aggressiveness. And then I take my hat off to her opponent to show heart, gut, and a great chin. You know, she was there all game, ready to fight, lay it all out on the line. I think it was great for boxing. I just think that Clarissa put too much pressure on herself and tried to press too hard to try to get the girl out of there. I think if she would have went back to her amateurish just boxing, she would have got that girl out of there sooner, because she would have got hit with shots that she didn't see coming, instead of just being overwhelmed with a whole bunch of punches that was just head snapping. But she was taken because she saw the punches coming.
Yeah, like you said, you know, I think Clarissa did put a little too much pressure on herself, but she knows the position that she's in, and she knows that, you know, this is a time when, you know, she can actually put women's boxing on the map. We've tried to do that a couple times. Just to let you know, we're going to start having a few more female boxers on our Tuesday show.
Great.
I want to kind of, you know, get into that a little bit this year. The gentleman that you were referring to, we have to give him a shout out, and I don't know who his trainer or his promoter is, but I definitely have to find this gentleman and that was Joshua Greer Jr. He was the one that held the pillow up in the ring. But, you know, hey, these young men, you know, they you know, you have to find a way to market yourself. And, you know, whether we remember, if there's any other fight that we will remember other than the Shields fight, we will definitely remember, like you said, the pillow man. So, you know, great job of marketing himself. And I'm hoping we can get him on the show very soon. Yeah, so, but, yeah, I loved it. You know, I was just saying, you know, you got to live up to this now. you just can't bring the pillow and then not live up to it. But when he, you know, when he put him to sleep, it was one of those times, you know, when the young men had a chance to show their skills on a card, being somewhat, even though it was a minor card, it was good to see these young men, you know, actually go out there, take it serious, and know, you know, that you know, this was a chance for them, their mark. Now, also on that same card with Lemieux, even though it wasn't televised, there was a young man that we had talked about a couple weeks ago with the trainer, and that's Mr. Diego De La Hoya. He had an 8-round fight. They're bringing him along very cautiously. But have you been able to watch his style? And you know, what do you think of the young Diego De La Hoya?
I mean, I don't think they should rush him, but I mean, he has a little talent with him. They're really pushing, you know, they're really trying to push him, especially with the name. I haven't had the chance to watch the fight. I'll probably watch it tonight. One of my buddies of mine sent me a link, so I'll be able to see that fight, even though it wasn't televised. I had some people that was there in the arena, so definitely I'll be able to take a look at it and give a better assessment of where he's at right now. But, you know, like how they do all, you know, young and up-and-coming guys, especially when you have a name like De La Hoya. So, you know, it won't be long. Everyone will know that name and know the face to go to the name very soon.
Now, you know, once again, I'm looking at, you know, the fight schedule. And I'm looking at, I believe, let's just take, for example, this week. We had fights in Atlantic City. We had fights in Philadelphia. And these were, you know, young up-and-comers, 6 and 8 rounders and whatnot. Club fights, if you will. Have you guys really noticed, you know, a precipitous drop off in the number of club fights, you know, especially around your area, you know, just due to this insurance situation? Because, I mean, everybody knows, I mean, you know, hey, most of the casinos in Atlantic City are in real trouble. You know, it's kind of outlived its usefulness. Of course, Philadelphia, we all know about the Philadelphia fighters and whatnot. But the great rivalries right there between Philly and New York and New Jersey and New York. Jabron, are we going to be seeing any of those this year, place in another venue other than New York?
that, sure it's going to happen. I don't know if it'll be with the boxing, the promoters, but far as the trainers and ex-fighters, it seems like they're really trying to be active, you know, and trying to push more amateur boxing to the forefront. In the last couple of weeks, we had, you know, the Gary Russell Seniors and the Mike Staffers and different trainers and fighters, like, you know, our layman being active and getting out in the communities and stuff like that. So I would definitely hope so. By the end of the year, something should definitely start taking off in these inner cities.
There's a UMass telecast next week on out of New York, that's a week before Chocolatito Danny Jacobs, Triple G Danny Jacobs fight. But I want to talk, just a little bit because I will admit I have no idea who the hell this guy is. It seems like, HBO has went back to what was successful for him in the first place. And that was putting Triple G and Chocolatito together on the same card. They kind of got away from that, thought that Chocolatito could do it on his own. But now they've come back to a sense of reality. And we have Chocolatito fighting for his WBC junior bantamweight title. What do you think about this for Chocolatito? Is there anyone down there in the junior bantamweight that is left for Chocolatito? And, you know, do you see him possibly moving up maybe this year? Or, you know, do you think he's still going to hold on to this bantamweight title? I know when I see him, he looks pretty comfortable at the weight. But I don't see any big fights for him unless he's fighting on the undercard of a Triple G or, you know, a legitimate superstar. Your thoughts?
I mean, I think if he move up, his old going to go. If he move up, weight division, his O eventually is going to go. Because me personally, I don't think he was that impressive in his last fight. So he still has some things in his repertoire that he needs to work on. I feel the same way about him as I feel about, what's his name? Zing Bing or whatever, the guy over in China. That Bob Arum is trying to promote, trying to make the next Manny Pacquiao, don't rush it. You saw what happened. They moved him up in a little bit of competition, and he got his first loss. So, the same thing with Chocolatito. I just think they are pushing him far as, I would say, media and trying to make him the face of boxing and this next golden boy / you know, the best thing since sliced bread. So I just think they need to pump their brakes on that.
I don't think that Zhao Ming was ever, he never has the skill of Chocolatito. Now, that's not saying, you know, that I don't agree with you about Chocolate Tito needs to make some improvements, but Zhao Ming was actually, I believe, now I might be wrong, but Zhao Ming was actually, you know, he was never really meant to be a champion. Zhao Ming was meant to be a cash cow in China because, you know, you could charge $5 for a fight and you could get 20 or 30 million just off the top of your head. You know, he was a national hero, and, you know, he's well known over in that part of Asia. And, you know, Bob is going to keep him there. And, you know, that's where he's going to make his money. He's going to make his money by sheer volume. You know, I mean, you can't take, you know, some of these other fights, even a Triple G or you know, some of them, and take those fights to China and make that kind of money. So Bob Arum was very smart in that sense, in that, you know, Zhao Ming does not have to be a champion. The only thing he has to do is put butts in seats. And in China, that's a whole lot of seats. So, you know, I don't think we can, you know, confuse those two. But we also see on this card the return of Andy Lee. Andy's career since Emmanuel's passing has been very up and down. He's left the States and went up back over to his native country to train. He's got a mediocre record over there. He's fighting Keandre Leatherwood. He's fighting an 8-round fight. What are your thoughts on Andy Lee? It just seems like he lost all direction to me once Emmanuel was gone.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. When is he fighting?
He's on the undercard of the Triple G fight.
Oh wow, they added him because he wasn't up there before. That's definitely not going to be televised.
No, that's not gonna, it's unless something happens. They have Petey Cruz also fighting on that card, and he's fighting a 10-rounder. Not sure why Andy's only fighting 8, but yeah, he's on that card. Kind of surprising to me, unless this is another Andy Lee, and I don't know about that. You know, we also have. I really wanted to ask some of our guys about this fight up in Boston. I've never seen a fight card in Boston for quite some time. And this is also one of those where they have one main event fighter and then a lot of Irish fighters. You know, I'm also thinking, you know, when you see fights, in Boston and some of these, you know, like I mentioned, you know, some of these other smaller venues around you, you know, I'm starting to see more of these fights around here or these fights being taken out of state, upstate. For instance, in Huntington on the 24th, you also have another fight, it's not being televised and not even being advertised that much. What's your explanation for that? I mean, usually, you know, New York is a place where, you know, if there's a fight in Poughkeepsie, you know, it's televised or reported by the New York Post or someone. Has this also, you know, are you experiencing the same effect that we are out here on the West Coast? you know, we don't have the great boxing writers or we don't have the big reporters that we used to. Has this become a problem, you know, in New York, promoting their fighters outside of the city?
Well, it all depends on who you talk to because, you know, we have diehard boxing fans and then you got casual boxing fans. So it kind of, like I said, it all depends on who you ask because, you know, the diehard fans are in tune in of what's going on. They know, like, where the fights are going to be and different things of that sort. Like, I had no idea that as many people was going to go up to Verona, you know. I could have rolled with somebody. I mean, I didn't feel like driving, but there's a lot of people that ended up going up there to that fight. And then some of my boxing buddies and guys that I converse with was very shocking. So, like I said, you know, it all depends on who you ask. If it's a diehard boxing fan, they don't care where it's at. They just want to see fights. Before I came on the show, I got somebody – I was on a call, and somebody's coming all the way from California to go to watch the Lomachenko fight in D.C.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, hey, but, you know, the reason why I ask you this, though, is you know, like, on that same week, you know, and you know, we talk smack, you know, about different things. But the same week as the fight up in Huntington, New York, your fight in Huntington is on the 24th. And on the 25th, CBS Sportsnet has a televised fight, you know, and they're only 6 and 8 rounders, out of Mulvane, Kansas. Now, it kind of seems to me when you have a network, even though this is free TV, that would rather give it more exposure to Mulvane, Kansas, this has to be a matter of numbers. And when you think of, you know, a place, you know, like, I mean, hey, I've been through Kansas. I can't say that I even know where the hell Mulvane is. But when you see them getting the type of exposure that we used to see, you know, designated for, you know, a fight out here at the Forum or a fight in Las Vegas at Cosmopolitan. But now you see fights going all over the place. Is this a boom? Or is this, you know, just part of what you want to see as part of boxing's growth?
No, you definitely want to see this part of boxing growth. Like, the smaller markets get more exposure, especially, like you said, it's on CBS, Sportsnet, you know. They might be no, you know, not household names, but they go in there and put on a spectacular performance. We're going to have people talk about it the same way I've heard people talk about, yo, you see the pillow guy on Friday? You know? So it, you know, if they put on a great show, hey. And another reason why stuff could be there also is, you know, the site fee. The promoter going to go. If they cutting the check, they going.
Definitely, you know, that, hey, like we said, boxing is still a business.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was saying that's why it's been a big mess with the Manny Pacquiao situation, because the Australians said, hey, Bob, we're going to cut you this big check. And then when the Amir Khan fight popped up, it was like, Bob was like, man, they messing with my money. I got guaranteed money waiting on me. You know, I'm just, you know, paraphrasing basically the situation.
you know, since nobody want to come out and actually say what the deal is or what's going on, the same way Scully said earlier, well, you know, better be if nobody want to fight him. Wait a minute. Let's get down to the business.
Yeah, you know, like I said, that you know, it's a little business and it's all about that. But hey, man, you know, in the meantime, I'm going to see if I can put on a search for the Pillow Man and try to get him on the show, man. I'd really like to follow this young man's career. But once again, man, you know, our 90 minutes is up, so why don't you? Yeah, tell the fans where they can find you on social media and anything that you might have going on.
Well, thanks for all the listeners. Thank you, JK, for having me once again. We had another wonderful, great week of boxing. Keep supporting boxing. Check your local listings for boxing on your local channels. The bounces, the Spike TVs, the BTs, et cetera. Just keep the sport alive. And you can find me on Facebook, Jabron Clemon, JABRANCLEMON. And don't forget, Danny Jacobs Triple G this weekend. Keep your eyes open. Let the fans know where they can find you, JK.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. You can find me at the Sports Crib. You can also find me on Facebook under the Pugilist Corner or the Sports Crib. And we look forward to talking to everyone next week. Hopefully we'll have the champ back. And also don't forget to catch us Tuesday as we interview some of the young and upcomers as well as some trainers, and hopefully we'll, as I told you, Brian, we will be featuring some female fighters very soon. So have a great night, everyone. Look for us Tuesday, and don't forget to catch us next week right here on the Weekend Wrap. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week.